welcome to a very special EIQ cast. I'm your host, Ross Levanto, and I'm here with Mike Rothman, Senior Vice President of Strategy and Chief Marketing Officer at EIQ. Mike, welcome back.
Thank you, Ross. Thanks for hosting today.
Absolutely.
It's always good to not have all the pressure that I have to
do. That's right,
funny,
of course.
Funny and smart and all that kind of good stuff.
And this is a very special EIQ cast because it's been a particularly interesting week in the IT security world because there was a situation that occurred that we're going to talk about at Heartland Payment Systems, which sheds a lot of light on some issues that are important to IT security professionals. And Mike, to start off with, why don't you just tell people what happened this week at Heartland Payment Systems just at a high level so we can give those people who I guess haven't been paying attention to the news a little perspective on what did occur.
Sure. You know, all those folks that, kind of either had their head in the sand or, were kind of all fixated on a little inauguration thing that may have, may have happened this week or something. But, Heartland Payment Systems, which is one of the payment processors that clears a lot of different credit card transactions, publicly announced that their systems had been compromised. And that they had a data breach, and more troubling, it's not really clear how big the data breach was. They said, they tend to deal with about 100 million transactions a month, but it's not clear how many unique credit card transactions or unique credit cards were used in those 100 million transactions. So I've been basically saying, it's clearly in the millions and could be up to, obviously, 100 million. But, the exact number is less important relative to just the magnitude of such a massive data breach. And the interesting thing to me was these guys didn't even know it, right? Visa called them up and MasterCard called them up and said, hey, we see a lot of suspicious activity. You may want to check into your systems. And then it took them a couple of months even beyond that to figure out what was going on. And these were guys that were PCI compliant. So you look at it from that standpoint, and I think there are going to be a lot of people asking a lot of questions. One, how relevant is PCI compliance? Now, what exactly does that mean? Two, how does this kind of thing happen again with someone like TJX? They didn't know for months and months and even years that somebody was in their database. Hannaford had a similar situation with the same kind of attack vector, an attack coming in through the firewall, compromise a bunch of different servers, and then install keylogs and or sniffers to steal the transaction data as it's going by, package it up, send it back out to the network. So, again, there are just a lot of questions coming out of this in terms of what the whole idea means. And for folks that are in the retail business or handle credit card data, obviously, this creates a lot of angst in terms of making sure that, they're not next.
Right, and you mentioned a lot of things in that pretty dense answer there, Mike, just to extrapolate a little bit further. I think there are probably some people that are confused because obviously at some point you would assume that credit card information is encrypted, and the reality obviously with this particular breach is that they were able to get at the information or the data when it was unencrypted, and I think that's
yes.
The key point.
And it is. And a lot of it gets back to system design. And there are all sorts of different things you can do to, kind of try to keep data encrypted, as much as makes sense. But in reality, this was a self-contained network. It was, kind of their evidently where their payment systems were running and was segmented as is required by PCI from a lot of their other corporate systems. So they probably didn't feel the need to encrypt everything. And, there's obviously a huge cost to encrypting all the data from that standpoint. So, I think that when we look to remedy this kind of thing, or something I wrote on the blog yesterday. It's going to take a dual-fold type of approach, which, certainly at one level, they have to get a lot better at understanding what's happening in their environment. We have to get more aggressive in terms of monitoring not just the log data, because again, the firewall logs are not going to help. The server logs are not going to help because these were activities that were somewhat authorized in some way, shape, or form, and certainly not going to set off any alarms because somebody encapsulated traffic that went through an actual allowed firewall rule. So one of the things that, we've been talking about at EIQ for a long time is the fact that log data is not enough, and you know, folks have to really kind of transcend the whole idea of looking in the rearview mirror by just evaluating your logs to looking at things like configuration data, which would have pinpointed that there were configuration changes on those servers, which would have been problematic, and looking at flow data, because when they packaged up that data and sent it outside of the network, clearly that's an anomalous flow and something that should have been picked up. You know, looking at performance data, obviously if you're running a sniffer on any of these devices, that's going to create performance overhead that could certainly have tipped off somebody that there were problems. So, you know, the point is to try to just make better use of the data that that we already have, you know, correlate it much more broadly and use that to figure out what is happening more effectively, more quickly, so that when these things happen, you can contain the damage before you have, again, a situation where you could have upwards of 100 million identities being stolen.
I think you make a very good point there, Mike, when you say that each one of those different data sources independently may not have indicated that there was an issue, but taken together and correlated is where you get that real clear picture of what's happening.
That's exactly right.
So one thing, you know, just to pat you on the back for a little bit, one of the things that you've said often, you know, in your previous lives is that, you know, compliance does not equal security. And is there a better, you know, it's tragic, of course, that this has to happen, but what a perfect example of that mantra.
Hey, you're exactly right, Ross, and I think that that this whole concept that I kind of had dubbed security first and compliance second, you know, as kind of an ancillary rule or law there, because, you know, again, I mean, I think that really kind of summarizes a lot of the challenges that security folks have to deal with. It's very easy and very tempting to kind of sit there and look and say, you know, I've got 12 requirements within PCI. They're fairly specific about what I should be doing. I'll do those, and then I'll move on to the other things that I'm supposed to be getting done. But ultimately, I think this was proven with Hannaford Brothers. Obviously, it's proven with Heartland. That's not enough, right? You know, that's kind of the lowest common denominator. And suffice it to say, the attackers are very familiar with PCI requirements. They know exactly what they're going to be fighting against. So the idea of kind of just putting the lowest common denominator in place from a defense standpoint, to me, is a path to be compromised. Because, again, if everybody knows what you're doing, it's sort of like, you know, Super Bowl's coming up in a couple of weeks, right?
Yep.
You know, it's sort of like going into the Super Bowl with a playbook that you've published on the internet. Right? You know, hey, I'm going to run this play, then I'm going to run this play, and that's the defense I'm going to show up with. You know, any skilled attacker is going to look at that and say, God, I know exactly how to slice and dice their defense because they're showing it to me. Well, that's exactly an analogy in terms of, you know, just looking at PCI and saying that's enough for me to get done what I need to do. Again, it's enough for you to pass your audit, but again, I would certainly not say it's enough to protect your private card data.
And obviously it's been a really bad week for PCI. I mean, what do you envision in terms of what should happen with PCI? I mean, just take a look at it. Are there changes that should be made? I mean, where are we in that process?
Well, I mean, you know, clearly changes have to come, right? You know, they really run the risk of, I'll call it a crisis of confidence. Because, you know, again, if you look and people say, hey, I'm PCI compliant, and then you go, well, so is Hannaford and so is Heartland. Yeah, so what? You know, then you start to lose the relevance of what that term even means. So, I certainly have a couple of different ideas that I'll be nurturing over the next few days. But, I mean, I do think that this is going to require kind of a process change within PCI because the idea, you know, PCI is really addressing security problems from 2 years ago because by the time they get through the whole gauntlet of approvals and consensus and all that kind of good stuff and then is rolled out, and then there's a time frame for that organizations have to comply with the new guidelines. You know, it's 2 years later when you're dealing with an attack, right? you know, 1.2 comes out back in October, and it says WEP is bad. Well, anybody in the security space has known wireless equivalent privacy, WEP, a wireless networking security standard, that's been broken for years, right? But that's first getting into the guidelines and the requirements now. So you look at it and say they've got to figure out how to iterate on this stuff faster, because the world is just moving a lot quicker than they are.
Fair enough. Well, it's been a very interesting week, and certainly for those of you out there listening, we'll be tracking very carefully what happens and providing our insight on an ongoing basis if you go to eiqnetworks.com. Thank you, Mike. Good to flip the roles here, but I think you'll be back on this side of the mic for our next podcast, and we thank everyone for listening.
You bet. Thanks a lot, Ross. Appreciate it.
You bet. And for now, this has been the EIQ Cast. We'll see you next time.
This podcast was produced by EIQ Networks, a provider of enterprise security and compliance management solutions. For more information, visit EIQ Networks on the web at www.eiqnetworks.com. EIQ Networks, security and compliance management redefined.